It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Look at all the fancy fucking pictures you got going back there.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, checking out the series. I do hope you hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones at Spotify and Apple Podcast, at NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Some of my recent guests have included Jerry Harrison of the Talking Heads, Idina Menzel. We had the Hives on, Barry Manilow. We had the filmmakers behind the movies Landscape with Invisible Hand, They Clone Tyrone, and Heart of Stone. I've also recently talked with Madison Beer, Fosia, Bethany Cosentino, Victini, and of course we had the 800th episode special featuring Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age, Janelle Monáe, Keanu Reeves and Dogstar, Suki Waterhouse, Rob Lowe, Monica Bellucci, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Tommy Stinson of The Replacements. You could also say Tommy Stinson of Bash and Pop, of Guns N' Roses, and lately of Cowboys in the Campfire. We're going to be talking about a couple of those right there. Starting with Cowboys in the Campfire, this is his new, what'd you call it? It's a little bit Americana. It's still singer-songwriter. Anyway, they got their debut album out, so we're going to get the background on this project and sort of taking some inspiration from the 60s and 70s country of his youth. That includes artists like Conway Twitty and Tanya Tucker. They had X's John Doe guest on the record, going to be asking about that, before we then turn our attention to The Replacements' 1985 album Tim, which just got its own reissue. He's going to tell us how the band reluctantly got behind these reissues and why he's not crazy about releasing demos, but also we'll get into things like the myth versus reality of the infamous Alex Chilton sessions that happened on this Tim record, and what it was like hearing Lord, you know, the artist Lord, covering The Replacements' Swingin' Party. All that and more as we talk Tim and Cowboys in the Campfire. It's Kyle Meredith with Tommy Stinson of The Replacements.
Hi.
And honestly, it's a pleasure to have you on here. You've been such a big part of so many amazing acts over the years, and you're continuing. I want to talk about Cowboys in the Campfire in just a moment, but I also want to tell you how much I'm enjoying this brand new record that you guys have put out.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, we funny road that one.
it's because that's started. Would you? It's been almost like a decade project in the making. Is that right?
I guess you could say that. I mean, Chip Robertson, I've been writing since I met him. He's my ex-wife's uncle. And when we moved east with our little baby at the time, Tallulah, he and I became fast friends. And I finished up, I was making at the time when I met him, I was finishing up a solo record called One Man Mutiny. And I basically finished that in his basement. And we've been writing since then. So, with our lives and schedules and all that kind of stuff going on and all that, we eked out a record after 10 years. That's not to say, I mean, he's also played, he played on One Man Mutiny. He played on the Bash and Pop record I did, the newer one. He's been involved in all these things, but we finally got our, we got enough material together to finally put out a record. So here we are.
There's such a cool mood on it. I think you've talked about in the press release about especially being inspired a little bit by the classic country that you grew up on that your parents were listening to with Conway Twitty, and I think you mentioned Tanya Tucker maybe in there. Yeah. How did that find its way in? Because maybe that's always been a part of your DNA. Like I understand it. I was when I read that, it made me think about the stuff that I grew up listening to that I probably rejected from my parents for a little while and then came back around to realizing how much, that ended up meaning something to me.
That sums up pretty much exactly the scenario here that I could tell you about this. So I never it wasn't so much that I was inspired by, I mean, I think that press release might be a little bit misleading in this, but in terms of, having any sort of singer-songwriter country or, those kinds of things in the mix, growing up in the Replacements, I mean, there was always fucking, Hank Williams going in the, and then Black Flag, and then, we'd be bouncing around with all this different stuff from everyone's, musical backgrounds, really. But in terms of looking back on it, I never really, and I still don't. I mean, I'm not like I didn't seek to make a country-ish record or anything like that. Basically, what Chip and I did was we figured out that we're a duo, and so we've been touring around just the two of us playing these songs that we'd written, and like wanted to keep it as simple and to that point as possible. Although, as I started, producing the thing, songs needed things that I felt that they were asking for, really. And so it turned out the way it was, the what it is really just a stripped down record of basically the same kind of shit I've always kind of written. There's always been a bit of a singer songwriter country tinge to everything, whether the Replacements or me after the Replacements. There's always been that in there from my upbringing. I mean, listening to all the different stuff I grew up listening to, it's all in there always, So I never, so I didn't really, intend to make that kind of record per se, but this is what we got.
Sure, and you put it just a little bit of the different clothing on it, and I think once you call it Cowboys on the Campfire, I mean that's what really cements it in our heads. That gives us that mood.
Yeah, and I guess that goes by design. That's how that works.
Yeah, and it's really not. I mean, to further on what you're saying, because not in a rip misrepresentation manner, but it's if you hadn't heard it and you're only going by what you and I just said, you'd probably have this idea of what the album is. And it's not exactly that because you're right. It is a singer-songwriter and you get these even, rhinestone cowboy moments. So I'm talking about the sweeping orchestration that goes through it and the type of melodies that you're using. I mean, Schemes, that slide guitar can't help or whatever that is, can't really help you, but put in a certain mood and souls and the way it builds and sweeps. I mean, it is more. There's so many creative moments going into this.
I mean, so I mean, you could derive a certain thing from the title of the record and me and you discussing it to a degree, but really there is a lot of different things in there. And I keep telling people this, with my songwriting, it's like the songs pretty much dictate what they want. I don't really, I've tried to force my will on songs, and I've grown up in the Replacements, where we tried to force our will on songs to try and make them this when they wanted to be that. And when you grow up doing that, you see the, the shortcomings of that desire. You know, some songs really do, you know, they speak to you. They want something more out of it, and it's up to you to figure out what that is. You know, these songs, they were written by Chip and I. You know, we toured around and they evolved in our touring and stuff, that and things changed and evolved by the time we got to recording them. That by the time we got to the recording process, we had a pretty good idea what those songs wanted and that. And then on top of that, you know, they spoke to us more. So, you know, all these things kind of come together, and, you know, that's what you end up with. The finished product is, you know, the songs finally get what they presented the way. It's like your little kids when they grow up and they go off to college, you know, that's kind of that vibe.
And we'll be right back right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Tommy Stinson.
Chris, can't be overlooked that, you know, there is a nice guest on here, John Doe. I've had him on here many, many times. And what he's playing there, is he upright bass that he's on?
Stand-up bass. Yeah, it's the first time he recorded stand-up bass with anybody. We just happened to be going through Austin, and he had just moved there. And we called him over to the studio and to hang out. And, you know, I told him before I got there, I said, I got like 5 songs or something like that. You feel like playing? And he was totally down for it. He came over, he played, and he sang. We had such a good time. The first 5 songs that comprised this record were the first songs they were like the centerpiece of the whole record. The ones we did with him. Once we did those 5 songs, it was clear to us that we needed to, one, you know, make a full record, because at that point we weren't even talking about making a record. We just talking about, we get these 5 songs, let's record them with John Doe. Hey, whenever he's here, you know. And so having done that, you know, it started the ball rolling of, you know, that was sort of the nucleus of the whole record right there. Yeah. And the songs that comprised that moment would have been Mr. Wrong, Karma's Bitch, and 3 others.
3 others.
Yeah. We ain't is in there that he did. Hey Man, originally. Yeah. So yeah, we started off with those songs and we kind of built around it. And, you know, most of it live. I mean, we did a lot of that just kind of on the fly.
And you're so close because of the heritage of both of you all. If he had just finished out the record, then you called a super group. That's all it takes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, John Doe has been a good friend of mine for almost 40 years, man. So it's kind of just funny to say that, really. But no, he's been a very, very good friend to me.
Well, as we talk about the past, too, I want to bring up, as I mentioned, Tim is the latest to get the reissue treatments in the Replacements catalog and gets a bit of a remix. As one of the big selling points, I think, along with the more tracks from the Alex Chilton sessions, and we've got a live album on here. When you remix something like this, when you go back to a classic, something that is embedded in so many people's memory to sound a certain way, not to say that it's dangerous, because whatever, fuck that, you can always go back to the original. But exactly. What is it that you all wanted to pull out of it? Is it anything specific?
So how these things work with these box sets is it's been Bob Mayer that's leading the parade on these. And if it were left to the Replacements, me, Paul, and Chris, that is, we would have never released any of these extra material, any of this extra stuff at all. We wouldn't have done that. That's because there's a reason why it didn't make the record. There's a reason why it's been in the vault, all the above. But what Bob has managed to do with, you know, starting with his book and stuff, is pique people's interest in the bigger story per record. And so you know, by him going in and seeing what's out there and what's, you know, what's, you know, in the vaults and that kind of thing, he's managed to pull together and help Warner Brothers throw together interesting packages that the fans are really into. And so for our, you know, for my buck, like I said, we would have never done this, but because Bob has done such a good job of it, and people are really revering them as, you know, quality things and stuff like that, we are uniquely in a, you know, this place where our music is really relevant still, to some degree, with, you know, modern culture and rock and roll, and, you know, indie radio, you know, has gone by the wayside, but, you know, we were a part of that. And I think, you know, there's still people want to hear more, know more about the story. And I think Bob's lined that up to have these box sets do tell the story. And, you know, with that, there's, you know, comes the butt puckering moments of like stuff, the outtakes, stuff you don't really want to hear that, like I said, we would never put out. But because the fans want that, I think it tells the bigger story about each record as it happens. I think, you know, we've acquiesced on it, and, you know, cool, you know, because like I said, we're still finding ourselves kind of uniquely relevant right now, which is great. You know, we couldn't be more grateful for that. So when you take all that into consideration, you know, all the outtakes and the weird stuff, you know, it tells the bigger story about about that particular time, you know.
Yes, you are very much still relevant. I mean, I know it's been told many, many times, but even like, kind of, it's been a few years, but Lorde, the artist Lorde, coming out and doing Swingin' Party, which, you know, is kind of a cool introduction to that whole generation there. I still hear the music in television, movies, and whatnot. But it is, as fans, I like to listen to this, and I imagine that
Wait,
is as
what
you're
was that last thing you said? Was it Lorde that did
Lorde.
Swingin' Party?
Lorde did Swing a Party. Yeah,
Is
she
that who
covered
did that?
actually not just live. She released a studio version of Swingin' Party as a B-side,
I
and that was
remember
great.
hearing that on something else, and I always forgot to ask, what the fuck was that? Because I heard it in the somewhere, and I was like, and I wasn't with anyone that had any idea what the fuck I was talking about. It must have been like a restaurant or something. I'm going, what? And then I forgot to follow up and find out what that was. But it was her, huh?
It was Lorde. So yeah, you're, and like, you know, that's the pop, you know, temple right now, part of that world, you know, Lorde and Lana and Taylor and everything. So it's interesting. I'm interested in who's heard that, you know,
Yeah.
of this younger generation, and what, if they've picked up on, you know, the ones who take it further.
Yeah, did she pick it? Did she was she a fan of that, or did someone say, hey, you might want to try this? This might be kind of cool, you know.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Tommy Stinson talking about this because I know it's different for the artist, and I think that's for a lot of people. You know, you hear about that with Prince, and you know, he kept the vault shut for a reason. Now it's open that he's gone. But do you get into any of that with other artists? Like, did you check out the Beatles stuff, you know, the deep when they started doing that same thing in the past few years? Like, do you have that thing?
Yeah, and so how that works, that's kind of the rub. So as much as we can poo-poo how much we would never have put out these extra tracks and all that stuff, we were all four of us in the Replacements, were all totally into the Big Star outtakes, the fucking Bob Dylan, this, that, all the other stuff. We are totally the fanboys like that are always into that. So we'd be, you know, being very hypocritical to say, well, nah, no one's gonna want to hear that from us, you know, that kind of thing. And as it turns out, you know, we're wrong. I mean, we'd be wrong to say that. People, I mean, if you're really that much of a music fan, all those things tell the story that people are interested in, just like we're interested in it, whether it's Bob Dylan, Rolling Stones, or fucking The Clash, whatever. So you got to take all that into consideration with this. And that's how I've kind of stepped back from it. And you know, Bob, like I said, Bob Mayer's done a good job with this stuff, with Warner Brothers. And, you know, if they were doing shoddy, just throwing crap against the wall, I think we would probably have put our foot down on that. But because they're well received, and it seems he's doing a really good job with it, there, it's a That's a good combo to let it go. And okay, all right, you can let the butt puckery moment go. See you later. I'll talk to you. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, some of that story that you're talking about, it's interesting hearing how many ways that you all tried to make Can't Hardly Wait possibly work for this record. You know, I think there's three different versions, and eventually even gets pushed down to the next one. And you know, just revisiting those other great moments. I mean, Dose of Thunder, like that bass really dances, you know, in that track. I mean, hell, Left of the Dial for yourself, and maybe not considering what you've already just said, but do you find that you had demo-itis? Are there any moments on here that you go, you know, I think that there was some more magic in that demo than maybe, you know, because that happens.
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you. I haven't involved myself enough to get to that point with any of them. But I do know that Nowhere Is My Home was always a lost gem. And you can't, not for nothing, you really can't discount that Here Comes a Regular was a second take, and that was it, you know. The magic in that, you can't discount that. That's a, you know, a moment. And, you know, I think, you know, looking at our legacy, I think some of our best works that people still hold to have that vibe about them. We, you know, before we got into having budgets to really noodle around with too many overdubs and spend too much time overthinking shit, we did things pretty much live. And, you know, while we had the lightning in a bottle moment, you know, and I think that stuff stands up, and it stands up because of that. We were at our strongest when we were in the moment, in a particular right there, like it's 3:45, we're rolling tape. It would have never happened if we'd started at 3:50. I mean, it's just like that finite moment. We really captured that as a band throughout our career for the most part. The later records, a little harder to find those gems in that regard, because we got, there was a trade-off. I think it was more of a trade-off of trying to find and dig out what songs might've wanted more than them just showing themselves, you know?
And well, on top of that, I mentioned, you know, a couple of the other bits that you do get the more of the Alex Chilton sessions in here. I'd wondered a little bit about that. Like, so much of that has been probably mythologized at this point. You know, you were there. Is the myth bigger than the reality in those moments?
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, there's really not much to the myth. I mean, reality is we met Alex and we're enamored with him. I think Paul was probably more so than even I or anything like that. But when we came up with the idea of having him produce, it was a good idea to us and sounded good until it wasn't. I mean, it just kind of came to a point where I think our, you know, romanticized idea of what he could bring to the table were quickly dashed. I think not for anything bad about him or anything. I think what we might have expected from him was something he had no idea of how to bring to the table, or knew what the fuck we were even, what it was that we wanted from him, you know. And that's why we ended up with Tommy Ehrlich. I think the record company and we just decided, we realized that, yeah, maybe this isn't exactly what we need, how this can work and how we can make a record. So Tommy Ehrlich enters the picture to try and rein it all in and make it make sense. You know?
It's interesting to hear those things. And I'll quickly bring up there's the live recording from 1986 on here. Do you have any recollections of that show?
Not really. At all. I mean, you gotta, for me, we were touring a lot then. I mean, from the time that I dropped out of school in the middle of my 10th grade, and Peter Jesperson was kind of given guardianship for me so I could leave the state and tour, we toured a lot. You know, we're, you know, when I look at that time, I just seems to me like we're always on the road. I had this apartment that I remember a little about being in, but I had my own apartment that, you know, at 17, that was a cool apartment, but I don't remember spending all that time. We're gone so much, you know.
Don't blame you. I can't remember most of the last couple decades, and that's not for just because, you know. So asking about one singular show 35 years ago or whatever.
I think I would have been surprised if you could. Thousands of shows I played over the course of my life. Yeah, I don't fucking remember nothing about that show. Straight up.
Well, it sounds like a fun show. I'll at least say it's fun to listen to. It's a good show to hear.
Well, that's what I'm told. I mean, I had to defer because there's two things I can't do with this stuff. I can listen to the stuff that I'm interested in and the stuff that I know is going to be cringy. I have to defer because I defer to people I trust with my life on these things. Peter Jesperson being one of them. And I don't necessarily trust Bob Muir with my life, but I trust that what he's doing and where he's going with it, people are back and you know, like I said, I defer to him because I can't really listen to it.
It's a good set. It's a great album. And I will repeat myself when I say the same thing about your latest with Cowboys and Campfire. You guys are doing some tour dates as well.
September. We're heading out on the 5th of September, starting in Portland, Maine. We're going to work our way down the East Coast. And then with a little luck, we're going to do the West Coast in November. Once the rains, earthquakes, floods, and fires are done.
What do you have to dodge out there, right? Exactly. Just everything.
Exactly. I moved to LA 30 years ago this summer, and when I got there, fires, floods, earthquakes, all within the first 6 months. I was looking at my girlfriend at that time in the car as we were kind of seeking shelter from the earthquake, and I'm just crying. It was scary as fuck, and I'm looking at her going, what was I thinking? Why did I come here? Oh, sorry. I love you. Yeah. Messed up, but.
And here we are again. Yeah, right.
I had a good run. I had a good run there. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, safe travels out there. And I do hope I'll see, you know, this project out on the road. You know, if you drop by Louisville, you can always say hi to us over here as well. But
you're in Louisville?
I'm in Louisville, man.
Yeah. Dude, we're going to be by there. We've been meaning to get back. I haven't been back to Louisville since I got my haircut. We played some cool place and this guy gave me a haircut. In his shop, like right next door or something like that. It was fun. He cut my hair with a broken bottle.
Is that true? Or are you just
No, I'm not. I got tips. You could look in. I think you can go into my Instagram feed and find that from 5-6 years ago or something. Yeah.
We've got real barbers here too, but yeah, it's
how you get that spiky hairdo. You know, it's a little flat today because I, you know, it's a hat day, but
drop by anytime. Tommy, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Seriously. Thank you so much for taking the time, and we'll see you around soon.
Absolutely, man. You have yourself a great day.
My thanks to Tommy Stinson. Reissue of Tim, you can check that out. And that new album by Cowboys in the Campfire is also currently available. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. I do hope you hit that subscribe button. Again, when you do that, you're going to get 3 brand new interviews sent to you every single week. That's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so you can keep up to date with your favorite artists and discover those new ones at Spotify and Apple Podcast, at NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org, because that's where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of your favorite classic tracks from the 70s, 80s, 90s. We got the best in new music. There's lots of music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews as well. One of my recent shows had the music of Warren Zevon, Cowboy Junkies, Wilco, Donnie and Joe Emerson, Kristen Hirsch, Morrissey, The Civil Wars, Black Pumas, Bell and Sebastian, Garbage, Big Audio Dynamite, Sonic Youth, David Bowie, Depeche Mode, Blur, PJ Harvey, Soundgarden, The Cranberries, of course The Replacements, and my interview with the cast of the Starz show Minx. That's just an example of what you get every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media spots. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I saw the Depeche Mode thing, and just my eyeballs was looking at it. It almost looked like it says Oppenheimer or something. When I looked at it, I'm like, wow. When people literally were walking around with Barbenheimer t-shirts on, I just thought, God, this is, our society's just gotten so goofy, man.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.